Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. As we start the year 2024, it's fair to ask whether we are approaching another world war. Indeed, one could make the case the third world war has already begun. The flashpoints are obvious: Ukraine and Gaza. There's no denying Western hegemony is being challenged, and hegemons never willingly relinquish power. To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my guests. In Budapest, we have George Samueli. He's a podcaster at The Gaggle, which can be found on YouTube and Locals. And in Marrakesh, we cross to Martin Jay. He's an award-winning journalist and commentator. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. All right, let's start out with George in Budapest. As we enter the new year, as I said in my introduction, George, there's a lot of flashpoints out there. But should we start thinking about connecting them? And there are other ones, too, what's going on in North Africa. Of course, the Biden administration's obsession with Taiwan. There seems to be a growing trend here of more instability. And as I also highlighted in my introduction, hegemons don't give up easily. Connect those dots if they're connectable. George.
Well, I think they are connectable. You're absolutely right, Peter, that hegemons do not give up power easily. In fact, they fight like hell to retain their power. And we do see that in the case of the United States. Obviously, there's the Ukraine conflict, in which the United States will under no circumstances just readily admit that they have lost the war with Russia. This goes against everything that the United States has been about for the past 100 years. And then, of course, you have the problem in the Middle East, and Secretary of State Antony Blinken is once again in the Middle East. And as the media reported, he's trying to tamp down tensions. He's trying to avoid escalation. Well, it's a little bit bloody late because the escalation is already there. You've got the situation on the border with Lebanon, where this could explode at any moment. And then, of course, you have the situation in the Red Sea with the United States and the UK blustering a great deal about how they're going to launch missiles at the Houthis. That it could cause serious problems because there is the issue of Iran. And the United States does not want to get into a war with Iran. But if it continues down this path and if it is unable to bring some kind of restraint, and it doesn't look like it's able to bring some restraint to Israel's actions, a war with Iran is a distinct possibility. So there's an awful lot of tension. Yeah. Again, and given the incompetence, weakness of the Biden administration, it could easily explode into something along the lines of World War III.
Well, and Martin, all the more so if we look at specifically at Gaza. George did a good job of going through the menu of the conflicts and related to that. But if the Biden administration would just simply and forcefully call for a ceasefire, it would kind of take a lot of the energy and fear out of what's going on in the Middle East. But the Biden administration has no intention of doing that. As a matter of fact, we keep hearing the administration saying they're trying to de-escalate. That's why Blinken's in the region. Well, one can make the argument, and I certainly would, that it's actually escalating it. As long as there's no pressure on Israel to change its behavior, we're going to go up the escalation ladder.
We are. And, as I've said before on your show, what the biggest worry is, of course, miscalculation. This is what really is keeping everybody awake at night. The Biden administration doesn't have a very good track record of that. Just look at where we are with Ukraine and the daily slaughter in Gaza, as you mentioned. So that's very worrying. But I think there are efforts by the Biden administration to some extent, try and push for de-escalation regionally while intensifying or supporting the Israel slaughter on a daily basis in Gaza, which is still going on now. I was somewhat encouraged by just a few days ago, one of my journalists wrote a piece in Lebanon about how Hezbollah and Israelis have actually pulled back from the border and reduced the numbers of soldiers, and the intensity has been simmered to some point. They haven't stopped, but they have reduced. They have actually pulled away from the abyss for the moment. But you know, it's when you look at Biden, you look at a 1970s and 1980s model of hegemony anyway. You know, and I think this is really a part of the problem, is that Biden is surrounded by dysfunctional, outdated, anachronistic, useless institutions like United Nations, you know, like the ICC in The Hague, and the EU in the center of all that. So, you know, he's still living his dream of being a 1980s president. And I think that
But isn't that really the point? That's really interesting the way you frame it. And I absolutely agree. You know, George, you know, we can, you know, it's always hard to look at, you know, when something, you know, in 1945, something ended. Everybody agrees with that. But when it comes to when things start, that's, you know, we could say the Second World War started in 1939. Well, the Chinese would say, well, the Japanese were, you know, in bothering us before then. I mean, these certain discrete moments are very difficult when you're going into a conflict. And actually, when you think about it, since 1945, a lot of conflicts really don't come to an end, with notable exceptions, routing of the Americans in Southeast Asia. But, you know, if we look at the architecture of the world, you know, last year, and now Russia is going to be heading BRICS this year, these are new vehicles here. And it seems to me that we can look at the case of the condemnation of Israel around the world for what it's doing in Gaza. And the U.S. never really could, NATO land never really could get the world on fire for Ukraine. It's because, you know, the G7 represents certain interests, and it's not the interests, nominally speaking, of the world anymore. This is what's going on. There's a disconnect with institutions that the West control, and most people are taking a ho-hum or even say, we don't want to participate. You know, the Red Sea, that's your problem. We didn't create it. Don't get us involved. You see what I'm getting at, George? There's also an institutional break.
But I think so. But the thing is that after 1945, you had the era of the bipolar world, which meant that the United States, you know, basically had its satellite states who did its bidding. There was a bloc led by the Soviet Union, and the United States kind of respected that bloc. It basically said, well, we're not going to mess with that bloc because it's really dangerous. You never know with these people. And the United States genuinely was afraid of the Soviet Union. The problem arose, I think, with the unipolar moment in 1991 when this alternative bloc collapsed. And ever since then, which is now more than 30 years ago, the United States has sought to dominate the world because they said, now that the Soviet Union's gone, there isn't a bipolar world anymore. There's just simply a one-pole world. We dominate it, and no one can challenge us. And of course, that is now happening. I mean, this was obviously totally delusional. You know, this was the Fukuyama, Paul Wolf of its moment. It was a delusional moment. And now there are all these other things that you've listed that have come to the surface. But the United States really doesn't accept that and refuses to abide by any of the restrictions. That's really very dangerous, because the United States has an excessive regard for itself, and therefore is doing things now that it would not have done, you know, back in the bipolar world, thinking, well, we can just do it. You know, we're so strong, no one can challenge us. And this is where it gets very dangerous. And this is where
even to the point, George, where we looked at the two blocks during the Cold War, during the unipolar moment, has actually allowed, I say with air quotes, the United States to make decisions for its allies, like blowing up the Nord Stream pipeline. I mean, you know, coercing your own allies to be in this bifurcated world. Either you're with us or against us. Okay, I thought we realize that that's not a very sane way to move forward, because the world is multipolar right now. Martin, jump in on that, because, you know, we have these different blocks, but they're very different than they were during the Cold War.
Yeah, things have changed a lot. And I really take George's point. It was a very good one. But to take the point further, I actually wonder whether the fact that there is now a multipolar world now, and that there are literally scores of countries in the global south who are just tired of being insignificant in the United Nations and are looking for a new geopolitical partner, a new sense of being where they feel that their input and their role is taken more seriously. Hence BRICS, hence the evolution of BRICS, you know, going forward so quickly. I wonder whether this is actually having an impact on the West and actually provoking people like Biden to go further, you know, with these conflicts than he would perhaps previously in the previous model, where there just wasn't other players out there who can actually get organized and actually can have an impact.
Well, I mean, to that point, Martin, you know, George pointed out correctly is that during the Cold War, the U.S. and its bloc, they were careful not to get themselves into a jam where they could suffer defeat, meaning great powers don't fight great powers. That's not a good idea because you can lose. But the Biden administration has seemed to have abandoned that, Martin.
Yeah, they have. And this is the real worry. And, and the EU is more or less supporting everything that the Biden administration does. And so we don't have a safety catch. We don't have a handbrake. We don't have a mechanism of, you know, older, perhaps more experienced people around the world who can actually meet and say something needs to be done. Something needs to be done to actually install some common sense into this.
Well, I mean, during the Cold War, again, to kind of steal George's wind here, is that restraint was actually a good thing, but no restraint is a bad thing. It's really interesting how we have evolved, okay, from this unipolar moment. It's far more dangerous now than it ever was during the Cold War. Keep going, Martin.
Yeah, and, you know, and I think that there is, because of that, there's a very real risk. I don't know how I can put this. There is a very real risk that this much banded about appalling cliche of World War III is a realistic one, you know, and the Biden administration, and within his own people have actually been telling him, stop using this expression, World War III, you know, and I think the Republicans are using it a lot now for their own mechanisms, their own ideas of their own political leverage. But, you know, it's pretty scary. I mean, The argument is we won't reach World War III scenario because the two major powers in the world are not actually taking pot shots at each other and are not threatening one another. But the huge question is relationships. You know, how much value does Iran place on its relationships with, say, the Houthis or Hezbollah in Lebanon? And these, you know, and that's the really big question here. And the same on the American side, you know.
Obviously, when you have the axis of resistance, there's a certain point in time where you put up or shut up. And this is one of those moments. Gentlemen, I'm going to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion whether we're approaching the Third World War. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing whether the Third World War is approaching. Let's go back to Budapest here. George, one of the things that I've been thinking about, actually a lot, is particularly when we think in terms of what's going on in Gaza, and then over the last 2 years, Biden's war, proxy war in Ukraine. And, you know, the soft power element just isn't working anymore. It's, you know, the U.S. can't charm the world anymore. I believe that it did at one time during the Cold War. I think soft power was quite meaningful, okay? But the soft power now, it just isn't there. And it gives, to kind of echo what something Martin said in the first part of the program, it's allowing people to say, nah, I don't think so, okay? With something that would have been unspeakable 30, 35 years ago. George.
Yes, I think so. The problem is that the Biden people have made their case on very ideological grounds. I mean, yes. Which again goes back to what we were talking about in the first half, which is why the world is so dangerous. It is that the Biden administration has made this so that it's a conflict between democracy and autocracy. Authoritarianism is on the march around the world. The United States needs to bring it to an end, this march of authoritarianism.
But that's something that could have made sense in 1972, 1974.
Right, you're absolutely right. But in 1972-74, the predominant voices in the West were coming from, let's say, you know, the Nixon administration, which is, despite our differences, we need to work together for the good of mankind, for the good of the world. You know, we need peace and cooperation. That was the gist. Sort of, yeah, we have our differences. We don't like the Soviet system. We don't like communism, but we have to work with them. That's very different from what Biden is doing. Biden is making this into a kind of an absolutist, you know, millenarian conflict. That's really very dangerous. So he's doing things that no one would have thought of in the past, such as seizing Russia's central bank reserves and handing it over to Ukraine. Now, this is $300 billion or whatever dollars it's said to be. Who knows what is actually the number is, but that's really pushing the envelope. And this wasn't just simply a wild idea that was once reported. It's continually being reported in the media that this is something the Biden people are pushing on reluctant Europeans. And you know, if the Biden people push, then they will get their way. Europeans' resistance nearly always evaporates. So when you have this conflict that is described as such absolutist terms, and with Biden, it's also in domestic politics. I mean, his speech the other day against Trump and his supporters is, again, a kind of really also like a calling for a civil war in the United States. That's where it gets very dangerous, because, you know, you're going to keep going until essentially there will be an armed conflict. I mean, it's obviously, I think Ukraine is where it's very dangerous, but it can take place in the Middle East. Iran, as far as the Biden people are concerned, is a part of this, the axis of evil. They don't use the term, but they unquestionably see it as an axis of evil. That means if there is some kind of an explosion with Iran on behalf of the Houthis, or Iran on behalf of Hezbollah against Israel, the United States will be drawn in under the Biden regime.
Well, see, but that's just the point. And that's what makes this so much different than the Cold War, Martin, is that I'm of the opinion, George just said it, is that instead of, you know, we have Blinken going, what, the sixth trip? I mean, if he hasn't accomplished anything by this point, then what do you do it? But anyway, that's beside the point. But it seems to me, and you have to think about this counterintuitively, is that these people in the Biden administration and the people that the simple followers in Europe, which are not worth speaking about anymore, they want escalation. This is a time to solve all problems. This is very ideological. We take care of Hamas, we take care of Hezbollah, the Houthis in Iran, all at once. Okay, this magical thinking, and that's what it is. But there are people thinking that, Martin.
I don't know. I'm not sure they do think that. I wonder whether they're kidding themselves. You know, can they really be?
Well, when have they gotten something right recently?
Who, name one U.S. president since 1979 who has even dreamt of bombing Iran and believing that he could pull it off. You know, American presidents traditionally.
Well, with Mr. Bolton in the White House, they were that far away from it.
All right, let's leave Bolton out of it. The problem is that, whether you believe in soft power or not, you know, this most people don't even know what it means. But, you know, in the Middle East, that defining moment of Obama in 2015, where he threatened Assad, and then the whole charade, the whole house of cards just collapsed. And every single person in this part of the world realized, actually, it's just a paper tiger. This whole idea that you can keep hegemony going and puff it up and, you know, and make it appear to be much more powerful than it is. The problem is we don't even have soft power anymore. So I think we are veering towards escalation, because it's the only deal in town for the Biden administration to keep face. You know, there is no other, you know, halfway house. There is no great diplomatic machine behind him. There's no soft power behind him.
Doesn't that reinforce what I said in my introduction? And George, I think, has already mentioned it. Hegemons don't go away pick up their marbles and go home. They fight. Okay.
Exactly. And we've got people like Biden who do not have the intellect or the foresight or the experience to actually look forward and to rejig the model, to reinvent America's and America's role in the West, you know, and it's like watching the British Empire collapse after the Second World War. You know, all of those African countries lining up for independence and our economy in a tailspin and no one really having a vision, you know, of how to go forward. And that's why Suez came about, because total identity crisis, you know, no one, you know, and I think the same thing's happening with Biden. Let's hope, let's pray we never get to a Third World War scenario. But I think if we ever do get there, it's just because the soft power idea that we have doesn't really exist. You know, if you look at American intervention in the last few years, you know, Libya, Syria, you know, Iraq, Afghanistan, all disasters, all situations that have blown up spectacularly in the face of America, and we're still paying for it today. You know, people like Biden probably look at those and use them, put them on a score sheet on one side, and on the other side, they think, well, yeah, but you know, we did really well in Yugoslavia. That was a great victory for us. And we also won, stop laughing, we won in Afghanistan in 89 when the Soviets pulled out. You know, they believe this BS.
Yeah, but these are mythology. I'm sorry, you shouldn't have said Yugoslavia because we got George in the room.
I know. I'm setting him up.
I think Martin did qualify it by saying that that's what they think, and there's no question that
they think that.
Yeah. So and again,
well, when you do ask them, they don't even know the real history.
No, that's right. But they do see that as the paradigm of how you trigger conflict. Then you pretend to be the peacemaker, the one who's going to resolve the conflict, and then of course, you know, you basically just simply exacerbate everything and keep it nicely bubbling along in the years later, because even now, 30 years later, the United States or NATO is continually threatening to get back in, you know, to bash the recalcitrant Serbs over Kosovo or the recalcitrant Serbs in Bosnia and Herzegovina.
Real quick, do you think that's because it would be an easy victory?
They do think that is an easy victory. Yeah. And I think that what drives so many of these interventions is that the United States thinks that they can get an easy victory and that they can simply shift the costs onto somebody else. And that's really what their formula has been in Ukraine, which is that, well, we can just simply raise the cost to them. You know, that's what we did in Afghanistan in the 1980s, that, well, it's relatively cost-free for us. It's quite costly for them. And I think that's what drives these interventions. The problem, I think, is that Ukraine is different from Afghanistan. And I think the Americans have been from the start playing a very dangerous game. And I don't see at the moment any sign that they want to stop with this, particularly as this is what Biden is about. Biden is just simply is an ideological creature. You know, he's driven by this this Manichaean view of the world. Yeah. And when you're driven by that, then you just don't stop. And I just don't see any of that, the kind of restraint. You might have had with Trump. Trump would, I think, be more restrained. I don't see this with Biden.
Well, Martin, you live in, our entire life, the volatile Middle East here. What are your tea leaves for 2024 in the Middle East? Because there's so many moving pieces right now. You've already mentioned a number of them. But if there is the perception that the United States is a paper tiger, which I think we should be careful about that, there are aircraft carriers and bombs, and ask the people of Gaza, it's not paper tiger. But the perception of the United States as a decision maker, how do you see 2024 playing out?
Very bleak. You know, I don't have anything positive to say about it. And there is a waiting game going on with many, many Arab elites, you know, but the whole issue of Gaza has driven a wedge right through them and made the region much, much more insecure now, because you've got those on one side who are passionately more now in support of the Palestinians. You've got those who were banging the drum for a long time and pretended to be supporters of Palestinians and now feel embarrassed and don't really know which way to turn, like the Saudis. Then you've got the others who are way in too deep and are going to stick right to the very end and support Israel, like Morocco and Emirates. So, you know, Arab League meetings are going to be very interesting. You know, they were synonymous before with photographs on the internet of middle-aged guys falling asleep, you know, sometimes even with custard on the front of their waistcoats. No disrespect to waistcoats. They're a fine institution. But you know, you asked me the question of how the Middle East is going to shape up. It's going to be more fractured, more unstable, and more vulnerable to superpowers and partners out there in the world.
Well, that's my last question before we run out of time. Does that increase the leverage of the United States or decrease it?
Well, I don't see any increased leverage from America. Okay. You know, it's not under the Biden administration. You know, now the waiting game I referred to is, will Trump come back? Because many GCC leaders are just waiting for that. They see Trump not as a silver bullet, but they see him as a guy they can work with, and they can't work with Biden. And you know, and that's reason. I think that's, we were talking earlier about.
Well, we got a long time, gentlemen, before we get to January of next year, 1 year, a lot can happen. That's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Budapest and in Marrakesh. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. And remember, Crosstalk Rules.